everyone. Tuesday, September 14th, and it's time to say good morning to our Quincy Superintendent of Schools, Roy Webb. And we always check in every month with the Quincy Public Schools, but some of the topics we talk about, of course, are viable for other school districts as well. And so the first and foremost thing I want to ask you, Superintendent Webb, I was on vacation. I didn't get all the details, but there was a lawsuit about how long kids have to stay out of class if it's believed they've been exposed to COVID-19. And that lawsuit, I think, has kind of been settled or has kind of died for lack of a second. What's happening with COVID-19 testing or quarantining in the schools? Bring us up to date.
Well, there was a hearing here in Quincy. We had gone under the executive order that basically said that we had to follow the recommendation of our local health department. So that's what we were doing in Quincy Public Schools, meaning that if the Adams County Health Department recommended 10 days out or 14 days out of quarantine because of a close contact, that's what we were following, and we followed that to the letter. Some parents took us to court saying that we couldn't do that. Their children were well. They did not show symptoms, but there is a ruling by the Adams County Health Department that you have to stay out 48 hours. Beyond that, it really does take a court order to extend that to the 10 days, 14 days. So they took us to court saying that we didn't have the authority to keep kids out beyond that point without that court order. And so the judge ruled in their favor, and they had a temporary restraining order restricting us from upholding what the Adams County Health Department said was their recommendation. So we've been following that since that time. I'm not going to hold other kids out and go through other courts. I mean, the ruling is pretty clear that we don't have the authority to do that. And the Adams County Health Department has an authority up to 48 hours. And beyond that, you would have to go to court in order to get that 10-day quarantine. So that's pretty quick.
Yeah, well, no, that's because really it catches the school district in the middle. You follow the directions of the Adams County Health Department. A parent has the right to say, I don't agree with that. They went to court. The judge basically kind of overruled the health department, said, no, 10 days or whatever is too much. 48 hours should be adequate. And so you're following the judge's direction. You're not really trying to fight any of this stuff. You're just looking for guidance. Am I correct in that?
You are. And I will tell you, the Adams County Health Department, they followed the law. We followed the law, what we thought was the law. But the parents did the right thing. I mean, the three parents that were involved, I understand what they did. They disagreed with us. They didn't make a big social media stink or anything like that. What they did was they took us to court, and the ruling was by the judge. They didn't overrule the Adams County Health Department. They looked at the law. The judge looked at the law and said, well, you don't have the authority beyond the 48 hours, Adams County Health Department, and you don't have the authority to quarantine Quincy Public Schools. We understand that completely. It would take the state's attorney going to court and issuing that anything beyond the 48 hours from a judge. So we understand the law clearly now. We're following that, and we'll continue to do so until I get hammered from the other side.
Well, that I'm sure will be coming at some point soon, because this thing is interesting. And Adams County is interesting because we definitely have a health department that issues edicts, and we have a prosecuting attorney that will not enforce any edicts. I mean, don't send the police department with a ticket, or they're not going to enforce it. So when you have that kind of knowledge in your county, there's going to be no enforcement of the law. It'd be kind of like if the Quincy Police Department said, well, you know, we think speeding is okay, yeah, and we're no longer going to issue speeding tickets. I think a lot of people would start speeding. So that's nothing to do with the Quincy school system. That's a whole law enforcement thing that you kind of get caught up in as an ancillary sideline to
it. And I will tell you, there is still a recommendation out there for the 10 days. And the great majority of parents are still following those recommendations. I think everybody wants to do what's right for kids. And so everybody's trying to do the right thing. And so I still think the great majority of people are keeping their kids out there, following the recommendations of the health department. But it's not a requirement. It's not the law. So people are, you know, doing what they want to do and choosing what they want to do.
Let's talk a little bit about attendance. Have you had days when, I mean, I just know from anecdotal experience on my own in my dealings with one private school here in Quincy, that there has not been a single day this year that every child has been in that classroom. There's been somebody missing. Now, that could be for COVID reasons. It could be for, you know, they, you know, had something else wrong with them. But there has not been perfect attendance, and school has been in session now for, what, 4 or 5 weeks. How is attendance at the Quincy Public Schools? How is COVID affecting attendance?
COVID's, you know, impacting attendance pretty well. And I will tell you that, so at our peak, which was September 8th, we had about 153 active positive cases that we were tracking just in Quincy Public Schools. And along with that, we probably had over 300 kids that were quarantined as well, too. So I mean, that's a pretty significant number of individuals that were out. You know, and Jared Welch, who we talk with probably on a daily basis, and I'm sure he doesn't appreciate that, but we do talk quite a bit. But he's been watching and studying, you know, the Delta variant. And he said it does peak, but then it drops off pretty fast. And we have seen kind of a drop off here recently and this week. Hopefully that trend continues and Mr. Welch is accurate in his prediction and it drops off significantly and we can get more kids back into school. But last week was a peak and it has dropped off a little bit since then.
And I know that variant Mu is right behind, but it looks like Delta was really hard hitting and very contagious, but didn't last very long. So we'll see. Now we got to deal with Mu. I guess we're going to be dealing with this for a long time. But as far as attendance, what help is being given to the children who are not in the classroom because of either quarantine or because their parents have chosen they don't want their children to wear a mask or they don't want whatever? What is help is Quincy Public Schools giving to children who are at home with their learning?
So part of the executive order is also a remote learning opportunity for kids that are either COVID positive or home for a quarantine because of a close contact. So we're working that. And so right now, children are given access to a computer. Either they have one at home or we give them one. And then it's a little different from classroom to classroom, but for the most part, I believe that what's set up is a Microsoft Teams type situation as a webinar, meaning there's not a lot of interaction between a student and teacher, but students can view what's taking place in the classroom with the teacher, and then they get their work sent home, you know, from the teacher. So that's what's being done as far as the remote learning aspect for those kids. Not the best case scenario, but it's kind of a good scenario for our kids.
Well, I mean, you know, for the shy kids, it's perfect. They never get called on in class. They just sit there and listen to the teacher and observe their classmates. For people like me, that
some teachers are still pinging them a little bit, but
But anyway, we're dealing with it. And Quincy Public Schools stayed open all last year, pretty much, and they're open this year. And you know, you're dealing with this, you know, as best you can. And so, give yourself a grade. You know, A, B, C, D.
Well, and I will tell you, we did stay open all of last year, and a lot of LUDA districts did not. A lot of our Western Big Six districts, even districts throughout the Midwest, even Missouri and Iowa, districts our size did not stay open all year. So just for perseverance and that resiliency, I give our kids, our staff, an A. I mean, without a doubt, they did a lot. I'm very proud of them and their efforts. We've started the year, I would say, a little, I use the word clunky, and, you know, being an English teacher, I shouldn't make up words, but it's been a little disjointed. We're kind of learning through, but I will tell you, my goal is, again, to stay open all year. It's important for this community. It's important for our parents, our single parents. I mean, if I close down schools, that causes a lot of problems. I think health-wise, I think socially and emotionally, and I think economically. I think it's critical for, I mean, we have 6,700 kids. That impacts, you know, 5,000 families in our community, and it's important that we stay open. So we're going to do that. I think Jared Welch is supportive of that. We have closed down classrooms already, and that's kind of the steps we take. I mean, there's individuals that are quarantined, and if we get too many and it's considered an outbreak or an issue within a classroom, we'll close that classroom. And then we look at each case individually, but we're going to keep schools open. I mean, that's our ultimate goal.
How do you think other school districts around us, and I know they're not in your same size category, but have you spoken to some of the smaller districts like Mendon or Payson or Liberty or, you know, Camp Point, even across the river? How are these smaller school districts? Are they doing okay? Are they able to stay in class? Are they able to function?
They are. They're doing well, and I'm amazed because we have a few more resources than some of those smaller school districts. I mean, I have interventionists, coaches. I mean, in an emergency situation, I can put those individuals in the classroom. You know, we're short on bus drivers, and that's impacted us a little because everybody can't ride the bus, but a lot of people can go into a classroom and help out or do supervision. But a lot of these smaller school districts don't have that. And we talk at least on a weekly basis and sometimes on a daily basis with the superintendents around us. And I'm amazed by their ability to do things that they do. And they're doing extremely well. I will tell you that maybe a difference, and I don't know why this has occurred, but they don't have as many positive cases. I don't know if it's just you know, it's a country air and they're spread out a little more, but whatever reason, sometimes you'll go to them, they'll be saying, oh, I don't know what we're going to do. We have 2-3 positive cases. And then I'm sitting over here, well, I had 153 positive cases yesterday. And so, but I will tell you, they are handling everything extremely well. And they deal with a lot of the political issues and the divisive issues that we deal with here in Quincy to maybe even a greater extent, because what may be 50-50 here in Quincy, you know, getting it from both sides, maybe 80-20 in some of those county schools. And unfortunately, they've had to be on that 20% side holding the line of an executive order because they know the consequences. And you saw some school districts and some school boards that went against, you know, the executive order that have since reversed that because they were placed on probation and people directly came down and told them, well, this is what's going to happen if you continue this. So you saw those school boards quickly reverse those decisions. And but it was those superintendents and those school boards that are trying to hold that line. So I think they're doing an amazing job in the small school districts around us.
Well, let me ask you this question. Roy Webb, superintendent of Quincy Public Schools, is a learned man, a scholar, an ex-military man. I'm sure you took an oath to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States. We've had several courts that said, yes, he's in his right to mandate masks and then to say, we're pulling your funding, you can't play your sports schedules, your children won't graduate from a accredited high school, you know. Is it overreach by our governor to get down into the workings of the local school district? I thought that's what local school boards were supposed to do. Most courts now have agreed that the governor has that power. But this is where this pushback came from these smaller school districts, and they were willing to push back until the tyrant, as they say, really put the hammer down. I mean, when you take away people's funding, you leave them no choice but to submit. But is that submission really authorized?
You know, I'm, and it is significant. You saw Warsaw, and they where they said, "Hey, we're going to lose $450,000 a month." And some people may think, $450,000. You know, for a district our size, you have to take that times 10. We're about 10 times the size of Warsaw, so that's $4.5 million a month. And you know, for
but
a size,
isn't it blackmail?
It, you know what? I'm always in favor of local control, and I think I trust our 7 board members to make decisions based upon what's best for Quincy, and I think they have a good pulse of what's taking place in their community. I think if you can allow local control, I think that's always best. Is this overreach? I can't make that decision here as the Quincy superintendent. I will tell you that the advisors I had, the legal advisors, and that's including our local advisors, including those from the IESA, the Superintendents Association, School Board Association, they all told me that this executive order is the force of law. And if you don't pass it, you're basically breaking the law. So that's the decision we had to make. Do we break the law and stand up to and protest this, or do we follow the executive order? So we chose to follow the executive order.
It's not the first time that people have had differing opinions. For example, prevailing wage. I remember in years past, groups like the school board or the park board or even the city council, they'd have to vote on, we will accept prevailing wage because it's a state mandate. And some people would say, absolutely not. I think that's awful and I won't vote for it. Well, if you're just the lone person and it's 7-1, you know, who cares? You get to stand on your soapbox and win to your constituents, but nothing really happens. But, you know, if everybody says, no, wait a minute, then you would be in trouble because, again, it is a local school board. But you have so many mandates from the state. I mean, you can't decide, for example, that physical education isn't important and we're not going to have PE in the Quincy Public Schools anymore. It's something you just can't do.
Yeah, and people that are fighting for, you know, local control or government overreach, where have you been for the last 25 years? I mean, I've been arguing about this. Our mandate manual has gone from about an inch thick to about 6 inches thick, and you can come into my office. I'll show you the state mandates and the code, the school code. It has grown, you know, in size immensely over the last 25 years, and I think it grew an inch last year. I mean, if you watched everything that was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, it is. I mean, it's more than just vaccines and masks, which are going to be temporary, right? They're passing laws right now that are going to have impacts on children 20 years from now and on our budgets. So there's a lot to talk about as far as government overreach and government control and lack of local control. I wish our legislator would just slow down and stop the school-based mandates and just leave it up to our 7 local board members. I think I have great confidence in their ability.
Okay. My guest today is the superintendent of the Quincy Public Schools, Roy Webb, and we're having a wide-ranging discussion today about everything going on in the Quincy Public Schools. And we've kind of got stuck, really, on, I guess, what you'd call the bad news, the stuff that, you know, is making the headlines. But there's so much great going on in the schools as well. These kids have come back. They're ready to learn. They're happy to see their classmates. Some of them have fallen behind, so we're going to talk about how they're working to catch those kiddos back up to speed. We'll be back right after we hear. We're back, and doing the Lindy Hop is Roy Webb. I couldn't keep him in his seat. He was up dancing and rocking and rolling. You have the haircut still for the 1950s, kind of rock and roll.
You know, no shampoo, and I don't need a comb. It's the best haircut I can have.
Keep it high and tight. Keep that military cut there, you know. Great things are happening in the Quincy Public Schools. There's no doubt about that. Some kids struggle. Some kids excel. That's kind of the beauty of, we talk about diversity and inclusion, that's kind of the diversity and inclusion of life. You are given the task as Quincy Public Schools to take all comers and to try to make the best citizens out of them that you can. How soon will we know? I mean, I'm sure some teachers already have a pretty good idea how far some kids are behind. What kind of remedial steps are being taken? Have there been more remedial steps this year than in years past because of COVID lag?
Yes, and I will tell you that our teachers, they do informal assessments and formal assessments throughout the year to rate where students are, and then they start working and to get to where they need to be by the end of the year. And it's I don't think it's as significant in Quincy Public Schools as maybe other school districts, simply because we were in person all last year and we were able to do that. But we'll have kids that are behind, so we have both some online opportunities for kids, plus other interventions. The typical interventions that you've seen, like reading recovery and other things, to get students back to where they need to be. But those have already started. Our informal assessments were very early in the year. Our formal assessments are wrapping up. You know, we're 3-4 weeks into the year with our MAP testing and NWEA. So then we put plans together for kids, and we'll get them to where they need to be.
So many children have what's called an individual education plan in the Quincy Public Schools. I think the average person who doesn't have a child in school or hasn't been involved in the school district for a while has no idea how many children, I mean, they may be really great at six subjects, but if they're really doing poorly in that seventh subject, they can get an individualized education plan. Talk about what that is and how you strive to get everybody kind of up to par, because the bottom line is, let's put it, it's, you can't all be Lake Wobegon. Every child cannot be above average or there won't be an average. I mean, somebody has to be below average. But what are you doing, you know, to try to help them not be quite so below average?
Right. So you're talking about an IEP or individual education plan, which is our special education programs, and for kids with disabilities. So it could be you see a kids in a lot of different situations. Some may be severe autistic kids, or they have a severe cognitive disability, or you have, may have kids on the other end of that spectrum that may just need a little speech and language at early childhood or early in grades 1 and 2. But you have a whole array in between. 19% of our kids at Quincy Public Schools have IEPs. They get special accommodations, special help. Sometimes they're in a special classroom to help them out, to get the resources they need so that they can be successful. Sometimes that success is determined on the goals from the IEP. Some kids, that may be to be in the regular classroom and take regular classes. That's the goal. Some kids, it may be just be to learn life skills so that once they graduate high school, maybe they can get a job, take care of themselves, cook and clean in their own household. So a whole array, but it's all based upon what the goals of the team. And the parents are part of that team. School district personnel and educational experts are part of that team that decide what those goals for those kids should be.
But 20%, 19%, one out of every five kids has some kind of identifiable problem that the school district thinks with extra effort can be overcome. And I think that's the thing that would shock a lot of people. An awful lot of effort is being put into making sure that every child gets a chance to succeed, and not just saying, well, they're never going to be able to, you know, do this, so we won't even try.
Yeah, and we're blessed in Quincy Public Schools because of some of the programs we've had. And I've come from a lot smaller school districts, so I understand that blessing that we have. We have autism classrooms. We have classrooms that take pretty severe cognitive disabilities. You know, it's called our cross-categorical classrooms. And we have classrooms for the deaf and hard of hearing. We have classrooms for the visually impaired. And so we can meet the needs of kids within our school district. When a lot of times when I was from a smaller school district, I had to send them someplace else within the school district. So I think Quincy, because of our size, and that's it, just because of our size, we're able to offer some of those resources that maybe smaller school districts could not.
And I think we, you know, the tip of the hat to those in Mend and Liberty, wherever, because those superintendents have to send their children, some of them, into Quincy to get that specialized. And I know a family, this was years ago, but they actually made the decision to move to Quincy, Illinois, so that their children in the public school system, they were deaf, could get this level of care that should have been afforded to them in a public school system, but in the small town they lived in just wasn't. And so those parents made a decision that they'll just move lock, stock, and barrel the whole family into the Quincy school district so that those kids would get that from day one. And, you know, not everybody can make that choice, but Quincy is kind of here. Because we're the biggest dog on the sled, we do have to pull a little bit of weight.
And I will tell you also, we have an amazing parochial school system in Quincy, but they don't have they don't have the resources to meet the needs of some of these students, especially a student that may be a severe, profound student, or a student with an emotional disability who on the autism spectrum. So they don't have the resources to meet the needs of those students. They don't have the special education teachers, the specialists, the social workers, the psychologists, everybody that we do have the resources for. So those families also usually, a lot of times, will make that decision, hey, we're going to need the resources of Quincy Public Schools. And that's a good thing. I think a community our size should have those resources, and we're there for all the kids of Quincy.
Yeah, choice is great. And, you know, of course, And Quincy also has a great talented and gifted program, or whatever they're calling it.
Absolutely.
This year.
Our valedictorian this year went to the United States Military Academy. Last year went to Stanford University. So you're talking a diverse school district that has the best and the brightest, and the kids that maybe have a disability, and everywhere in between. It really is a great school district and a great place to come and assimilate. In the same classroom, you can have a kid with maybe a 65 IQ and a kid with a 145 IQ, and they're living, learning, and loving together in that same classroom in Quincy Public Schools.
And the great thing about that 145 versus 65 IQ, the EQ, the emotional quotient, that 145 may be a little lower than the kid with a 65, so they're learning from each other.
Absolutely.
It is a microcosm. How have the new schools, because now we're well into this, you know, we're supposed to try to make this perfect mix. They'd all have the same poverty level. They'd all have the same racial makeup. They'd all have the same socioeconomic makeup. There wouldn't be a poor school or a rich school or a smart school or a dumb school. How is it working out? How is the reality of that working out?
I think very well. When you remember Washington School was 98% low income. Barry Ann was 80%. Then you had a Monroe School and a Madison School that might have been 25% or 30%. Everybody's in that range between about 55 and 65% low income. All five of our elementary schools, they look pretty much the same, and that's a good thing for our community. So all five of our elementary schools are beautiful world-class facilities, and they have all pretty much the same amount, about 600 kids in those schools. And I don't think you would be able to tell too much difference walking through the schools.
Well, I will say this, as someone who used to volunteer a lot at Washington and Barry Ann back in the olden days when they were the poor schools, I used to say, man, I don't have kids, but I'd send my kid to school here. Man, the teachers care. Everybody's pulling in the same harness. Parent participation was tough. I'll admit, that's why I was there as an adult volunteer. I was there to augment some parent participation. But as far as, you know, so I'm glad. I want it to be equal as much as possible. That is what we really need. We cannot have this haves and have not society in Quincy. We're too small a town for that.
Right. And what happened was those schools would actually get more resources than all the other schools because of their low income numbers and the way Title I money was broken down. So even though those schools had a lot of kids from poverty, they probably were the rich schools because they had a lot more resources. And the Monroe and Madison might not have had as many interventionists or specialists in those schools because the money and the computers and everything was kind of floated to the other schools. But I agree. I loved going into Barry Ann in Washington. And, you know, I actually chose Barry Ann as a place to receive my last military medal when General Orr came down from Des Moines, Iowa. It was the kids in those schools were amazing. And you're right, the staff cared a great deal.
And that is what is continuing today, is that caring staff. And these teachers, if one thing COVID has done, it has made parents appreciate teachers, because anyone who thought, well, I don't know why you can't teach them to do this. Well, you had a chance at your kitchen table to try to do it, did you? Were you successful?
It's not an easy job. It is not an easy job.
It is really, truly not easy, and it's so important. So many great things are happening. Great things happen because of your personnel. Still, I'm sure, are you up to full staff on your teachers? Are you still a few short some places?
We're still a couple short on staff, and I think our licensed staff, we're in good shape. Our paraeducators, if you want to be a paraeducator, if you want to be a substitute teacher, if you'd like to be a bus driver, a bus rider, a cook, please get a hold of Lisa Otten, and we can put you to work. Probably is 10:30 quick enough?
I think you can probably be on that run today. Yeah.
It is a great time. A lot of great things going on. I want to point out next month is The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
We're going to do our musical is going to be back on this year, and all of our sports are raring to go around the community. I thought the QHS football game, we had about 4,000 people in the stands. It didn't finish the way we wanted, but
yes,
congratulations. But Coach Little bounced back the next week and beat Alton and his team. But we're excited to see all our kids back doing what they passionately love. And it is. It's an exciting and fun time.
Yeah, that, I'm so looking forward to the Wizard of Oz. It's,
yeah.
It's going to be great. You know, you would be a great and powerful Oz. Are you going to be the man behind the curtain?
I am not going to be on stage. Not enough talent there.
Not a flying monkey? Nothing?
You know, they are going to have flying monkeys.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, which is super cool. And I asked, you know, I'm airborne. I've jumped out of planes. I said, hey, can I fly in that? And Dr. Pettit told me, no, you can't, Roy. He said, those harnesses are specially designed for the person that's mm-hmm. going to be the flying monkey. So I was not allowed to get in that harness.
Let me tell you, I don't want to make light of your military airborne career, but those harnesses for Peter Pan and flying monkeys and things, they are treacherous and very painful.
Oh.
And I was the stage manager for Peter Pan when it opened at the Quincy Community Theater, and we had to call the paramedics between shows one time for our poor Peter Pan because she was just beat up all get up from the harness and everything.
Geez.
So those children that choose to go into harness would be great. However, I would pay a lot of money for a special preview night to see you as a flying monkey. I think if the Quincy School Foundation wants to get something like that going, I think that would be fantastic.
I'm in.
You and Saeed, flying monkey.
There we go.
You can battle in midair, yeah.
We could.
Well, I'm excited. So you're actually going to fly. That's going to be fantastic.
That is what I've heard, yes.
Oh, and that
it's a pretty significant cost
I know.
For those flying monkeys, but I think we are going to do that.
That is great. Well, you know, there again, the school district, again, and it's those private donations to the music department and to the sports departments that really allow those departments to exist, because
absolutely.
You really don't have any money to spend on, even though I don't think those things are really extra. I think that's an important part of the high school experience. But, you know, you've got your money goes to the music in the classroom and to the physical education in the classroom, not to sporting events and musicals.
Our boosters, our Friends of the Performing Arts, and our foundation, people don't understand, but they fund a great majority of our extracurriculars, a lot of extra things that you even see in the classrooms. But for sports and music, yeah, they're a lifeline to our programs and amazing programs, right? I mean, the things that you see on our athletic fields and courts and in our concert halls and on stage at Quincy Public Schools is really second to none, and a big part of that is because of those donations. You're absolutely right.
Well, thank you for letting QHS and QND play. I think it's brilliant. I hope that the communities can behave themselves and we can keep that up, and it is nice. You know, Quincy, Notre Dame, small as it is, they're very proud of their athletic facility, but I'm sure they also love playing on that AstroTurf and being in that big Flynn Stadium and, you know, enjoying those advantages. And everybody comported themselves very well, and I think that's the most important thing. During the game, I don't know, was there anything after the game that happened?
I'm not going to get into after the game, but I will tell you that it was a great community event, I think. And I think Mark McDowell and I have, again, he probably hears from me more than he wants to, but I think we've become pretty close friends, and I think there is a rivalry, and
well, of course.
But it's a friendly rivalry, and it's all good, and hopefully when we get on the volleyball court and the basketball court, we wrap that up.
Okay, well, you and McDowell can be flying monkeys together. Thank you very much.